everybody, and welcome back to Author Eke. Today we have Michael Hearns. I'm letting him introduce himself, and then we're going to talk about his books and his writing style and what kind of motivates him and whatever else kind of tickles our fancy. So go ahead, Michael, and welcome to Author Eke.
Thanks, Travis. So glad to be here. Thank you for having me. My name is Michael Hearns, born and raised in Miami, Florida, and did 27 years as a South Florida police officer and detective. 10 of those years undercover in the Medellin and Cali drug cartels. I have a wide range of experience behind me, but post-retirement, I started working in film and TV as a technical advisor and saw the way things were being done. And a lot of people kept asking me about writing a book, and I think they all wanted me to write a tell-all. I really didn't want to do that. So I started to write a fictional character named Cade Taylor, and I actually thought it'd be one and done, but there was such a hue and cry for more Cade Taylor that we're now into our fourth book. So we have four novels in the series, and that's where I am right now.
Excellent, excellent. So I want to let everybody know that, yes, there are people that were actually born in Miami that still live there.
Yeah. So yeah, actually, I was one of the major hospitals in Miami. I was one of the first kids born in that hospital back in the early 1960s. So yeah.
It's like finding a unicorn.
It is. I mean, yeah. I got that a lot when I was a younger man, and then I didn't think too much of it. But now that I'm older, to hear someone who's actually a natural native Miamian, a true 305er, as they call them. Yeah. Few and far.
Excellent. 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 So your books aren't a tell-all, but do they have snippets of actual case things? And do you have to get your books approved or vetted through the Miami Police Department or the DEA or FBI, whoever you might have worked with at that time?
No, I don't have to do any of that. I was kind of an outlier lone wolf to begin with back in the day. So that's really not going to work now that they have zero constraints over me. The books are like everything, like most authors, the books are a conglomeration of you write what you know. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to try and bring an element to the readers that you don't normally see in law enforcement. And what we did in my capacity back when I was working was kind of covert and off the radar. So readers actually have a back channel view of that kind of a lifestyle. So in answer to your question, is it a combination of life and art coming together? I would say yes. I often defer to the whole Robin Masters Magnum PI thing that you just have to kind of figure out how much of Cade Taylor is me and how much of Cade Taylor is fiction.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's such a great series, too. Oh, I mean, Magnum P.I., I mean, come on. That's amazing.
Classic. Classic. Yeah.
So you sit down and write, or you say, okay, I've got to do certain things today, or I have a schedule, I know when the book, I want to get it done, I have the backward plan. What kind of is your writing style?
You know, it's a combination of all of that. My wife, sometimes I'll say to her, she'll say, what are you doing today? I say, I have to write. And she'll say, well, why are you telling me this? And I say, because if I don't tell you, I won't do it. So I have to make that announcement so that I'll do it. I oftentimes have an 8 or 9 month calendar in my head of where I want to be. And some days I'm like a house on fire, and some days it's really not coming too well. But I do churn and burn my way through it, and we end up getting the first draft done and the manuscript done, and then the editor and I start to pour it over.
Right. I'm pretty much the same. I try to do 6 to 9 months to, you know, get the final product out, you know, however long to write it. And like, I've just finished my third book, which is a historical fiction, different than the thriller suspense that I've written. I just finished it, but now you're going through the edits, you know, and now you're going back through again. You're going back through again. Eventually you're going to say, okay, I'm done. I'm ready to, take care of that. But so, yeah, I don't outline, I just kind of write. I outlined a little bit for this book on what I wanted to talk about, the different weapons, the different scenarios and different battlefield conditions and the other dialogue with it. Do you outline or do you just kind of go for broke?
I'm very much like you. I kind of know the beginning and I kind of know the end. and I let the writing process take me through it as I go along. I will say that my books take place in 1998. So I would not consider this historical fiction, but I commiserate with you because there are readers and people out there who will say, hey, wait a minute. They didn't have that kind of a cell phone then, or they didn't have this, didn't have that. So I really do my due diligence. There's a lot of research. I research tidal charts, moon phases, current events.
Yes, I do the same thing.
And I, you know, and the readers today are a lot more sophisticated than people realize. And I think than some authors realize. And if you're doing, in your case, a historical fiction and you're talking about weaponry, there are some people out there who truly know their weaponry and you better be spot on. So I don't want to cheat the reader and I don't want to fool the reader. So I do my absolute hardest to give them as much authenticity as I can.
Yeah, I do the same thing. If I say it's a full moon on November 11th, 1918, it was a full moon.
Yeah.
Crescent moon.
In the Kay Taylor series, they'll talk about maybe who the Miami Dolphins are playing that day. And and when they go to a restaurant or something, they actually order entrees from that actual restaurant, not just something that's made up. Miami is almost as big a character as any individual is in these books.
Oh, yeah, I spent down there for a conference. I spent about a week down there in August. And the hotel we stayed at with some guys I worked with at the time, they didn't have a liquor license, but they had beer, and they could give it to you. They couldn't sell it because they could give it to you. Hmm. And about third or fourth day, in there, you know, we were like, hey, can we have a couple, you know, a few Coronas? They said, you have drank us out of all our beer. You know, major accomplishment in Miami. Yeah. I felt pretty good about that.
And my wife actually told me a story that similar situation in New Orleans happened to her in a business conference, not to her, but to her clientele. Yeah. And to think you could actually drink New Orleans dry, that's almost crazy and unheard of.
That is crazy.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about these books is, once again, there's a tremendous amount of authenticity in these books, and I try to bring some realism to it. And I really want everyone to get an understanding, because Miami, like you just said, you visited Miami. Miami, like Chicago, like New York, like Los Angeles, is a town that you may not live in, but it's a city you at least visited. So it's very incumbent upon me to make these books as accurate as I can.
Yeah, I'll you know, put weaponry in the book as a Browning automatic rifle. So I put it in the book, and then I said, when would the Browning automatic rifle actually saw its first combat? And it was the latter part of, you know, spring, summer of 1918. So I had to make sure that, okay, I needed to remove that then and then introduce it later on in the book. So there's a lot of that. When did they go from, you know, the Springfield to the Enfield and the rifles? And because a lot of people, you know, like I'm talking to one guy, one author, and he said there's 37 rivets in a P-38, you know, for fighter. And somebody goes, no, there's actually 40. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I mean,
all right.
those, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy. Yeah. Sometimes readers will point out something to you, and it may not be an inaccuracy in your book. It may just be a typo. It may be the fact that it could be something very innocuous and very small. And I've come to realize that sometimes the readers just want to be able to convey to you that they read the book, and they also want to have a connection with you. And I oftentimes just say to them, I hope it didn't detract from your reading experience. And we usually have a very lovely conversation after that.
Yeah, I actually had a historian read the book and help me when I kept, okay, you know, why didn't we get in World War I initially? Well, you know, what were some of the catalysts for that? And so, he helped out quite a bit, as a matter of fact. So you've got your fourth. How many's going to be in the series? Do you know? Or,
you know, it does not have a termination point. I think I'm going to keep writing the books as long as I can produce quality material. There is a legion of Cade Taylor fans out there, and they're growing quite rapidly. They really enjoy Cade. They commiserate with Cade. My books are written in the first person, so many people feel that they're right in the car, right in the house, right in the restaurant, right in the drug deal with Cade when these events take place. So there's a strong immersion perspective between reader.
Do you find it easier to write in the first person than the second or third?
I don't know. I've only written four books, and all four of them in the first person. My next book that I'm writing now is a true narrative. It's an entirely different situation, totally different, you know, nothing to do with Kay Taylor. We will see how that pans out. But right now, there's a strong following for Kay Taylor.
Right.
And he's really captured a lot of people's hearts and minds. So we'll just see. I'm never going to say no. I just could never tell you quantitatively, this is the last one. There's only two more. I can't say that.
It has its own life. It truly does. Be done when it's done.
And because it starts in 1998, we have all of this forward motion to go forward with if we choose to.
Do you find that when they, you know, when they have maybe a Scarface movie or any movies or shows that take period in that time period, that you'll see any kind of increase in sales or enthusiasm for the books or anything that generates, like, you know, a lot of people, younger folks, right? You know, the 20s, and they don't, you know, they may have heard about Miami in the 80s and cocaine, you know, in the harbor floating, and, you know, some of those cigar boats and things. But what kind of you think brings them to the book sale? You know, the 80s, that was crazy time. That was crazy time, especially with the Medellin and, you know, South American and drug cartels and such. And the Mario Boatlift, right? I mean, that was around that period too.
Yeah, 1980, actually the year 1980, a lot changed in Miami with the Mario Boatlift, also with the Arthur McDuffie riots. You know, you talk to these people and they say to them, they say, you read in the New York Times that some stagehand is retiring after 71 years, 52 years, 48 years, whatever it may be, on the Broadway theater. And you say, wow, you've seen every play. And he's like, yeah, because he's seen it from the backstage. He's seen it from behind the curtain. And in my case, as a longtime resident and then an actual member of the real, authentic Miami Vice, I see that art form from a realistic, you know, optic. So I'm kind of jaded, if not swayed by my own feet in reality. So as a member, once again, as I mentioned, of the actual real Miami Vice unit and also living there, I see it a little differently. And I recognize there are touch points. There are ignition points for people. Mm-hmm. There could be Scarface. It could be Cocaine Cowboys. It could be Dexter. Mm-hmm. It could be anything.
Dexter. Didn't even think about that.
Jeffrey did a great job with Dexter.
Wow, that's amazing. So yeah, I love that thing.
All these things elicit. But the thing about Miami, and we see this a lot with Miami Vice, and we saw with the TV show Burn Notice, when TV shows are filmed in Miami has a natural light that's very hard to replicate in Hollywood. And that's why we true Miamians can tell when something says they're filmed in Miami and it's not, and when something is actually filmed in Miami. And really? Like most people who are hometown loyal, we get very put off when we think, oh yeah, this is supposed to be a Miami story, and we see mountains in the background, or we see, other things, other things that just,
I hate that because that's impossible.
Yeah, you know? They just don't lend themselves to the tropical locale. So one of the things about Miami Vice was that, and it's, I understand production, I understand how shooting schedules are. I've worked on TV shows, I've worked on film projects. One of the things we see in Miami is they'll make a left-hand turn somewhere, and then all of a sudden we know they're 18 miles away. But with Kay Taylor, when he makes a left turn, he truthfully makes a left turn on that actual street. He makes a right turn, he makes a right turn on that actual street. They are very chronologically and geographically accurate books. So you can, like, one of my neighbors actually reads my books with Google Maps open. And she actually pulls up and she looks at the street views and sees that everything I'm writing about is exactly the way it is in real life.
Yeah. So when I wrote the first book, Flames of Deception, I wanted to make it like that, right? So what I did, like when they go into Russia, you can, I mean, if you want to go right now, I wouldn't recommend it, by the way, not right now. That if you want to stay in the hotel, that the name of the hotel is the name of the hotel. It's on the street, right? If you want to go eat in the restaurant, it's right there. It's the name of the restaurant. And I looked at the menu just like you do. You know, do you want a Beto box or whatever, Beno box? Or, you know, what highway do they go down? And if they're going from one place in Russia to another, but have to veer off, that road you take a left on, or you take a right. So you can actually follow that if you wanted to. And the same I did with the book before, after that, Cobalt in Lake Como, right? Or China and lower Upper Mongolia. I mean, you could, you don't want people to say, okay, this is, I get that. You know, you went left or right, you could do that. I want to be able to immerse the reader in something that they could, oh man, I would like to go see that or whatever, right? And they could actually do it.
Yeah, I think the reader wants you to tell a compelling and entertaining story. I like to take it a step further and take them on an actual visceral mm-hmm. journey, something they can visually see and viscerally mm-hmm. they can actually feel. So once again, writing in the first person and having Kay Taylor, you know, you go to bed with him, you wake up with him. It's not like 6 days later, 5 days later. His cases unfold day by day by day, and you go from start to finish with him throughout the entire ordeal.
That's like Dan Brown. All his books take place within a 24-hour period.
Yeah, mine take place within like an 8-day period, 6-day period. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. My last book that I'm coming out, 104, that's an 18-month, you know, because I June 1917 to October 1918. So I put the whole, it's a diary of a soldier, unknown soldier.
Okay.
Basically, read through from a father and son. And I want to make it as truthful as possible. So what's this other thing you're working on?
So, you know, it's really in its infancy. All I can really say, because I don't, not that I'm being very coy or holding cards to my chest. It just really is still in development. It's only like 3 or 4 chapters in. It's about a guy in Los Angeles, and he's dealing with, although it happened earlier in his life, he's still dealing with the loss of his wife. Mm-hmm. And still trying to hold it together. And he kind of comes across a very, I don't want to say paranormal, I'll just say a very crazy situation. It's very M. Night Shyamalan type of thing. So,
okay. Excellent. Excellent. And then are you working on your, I guess, fifth for the series? Are you doing tandem projects? Can you do that? I do that sometimes.
I don't do tandem only because I don't know if I have the skill set for it. The latest Kay Taylor novel.
I probably don't.
the latest Kay Taylor novel titled Choices and Chances came out February 9th. It came out about 2 weeks ago.
So, oh, nice. Congratulations.
You know, I'm still in promotion with that book, and I'm still, you know, working with that aspect of it. But in the same respect, I'm starting to already, you know, move towards this story in Los Angeles.
So who's your publisher? Are you self-publish or you have a publisher?
I work with a multimedia company called Beate Bellicosi, which is Latin for Blessed Are the Warriors, something you might be able to relate to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're doing quite well. So I work with them.
Excellent. Excellent. Do they have other authors? It's a multimedia company. It sounds like they probably do more than just books.
They've done some stuff in film, and they're mm-hmm. kind of dabbling in podcasts. I really don't have the full litany of what they do, but that's some work.
Excellent. With. Excellent. Excellent. So what do you do in your free time? I mean, evidently, because you tell your wife you have to work. So that means you do have free time, when she said, no, you're not going to write.
You know,
we're going to do something.
It varies. I mean, we live in a part of Florida that we try to enjoy as much as we can. And there's this, you know, like when you watch television and movies, they oftentimes show a sculpturist or an author or a painter living in a beautiful seaside home in Maine or Carmel, California. Mm-hmm. I have real life things, you know. I have to go to the supermarket, and I have to do things, and you know. So my life is consumed with what people would consider to be mundane and trivial, and then other people consider it to be rather high speed. It's just a day in the life.
Yeah, I retired about a year and a half ago, I think, or something like that. But one August, and I got bored. So I started working at the school here as a monitor on a special education bus. You know, it's like 5 hours a day, but I get a break of 5 hours. So that allows me to write. Then, but in the summertime, I like to, you know, go work out and go sit by the pool if it's not 1,000 degrees outside. And write, because my mind has to be fresh. Later in the day, I'm like, oh my God, I can't, you know, I don't even want to read anything, more or less write anything. So I'm a morning person writer, definitely in the summer or any kind of time we have a break. But I don't sit down and write 8 hours. You know, I'll do a couple hours, and then go do something else, maybe come back and do something. But I got to keep, because that's the way I worked, you know, when I got out of the Army and how I work, just balls to the walls, go back, relax, and then do it again. It was kind of
the formula that's kind of worked for me in the past is I try, and I want to emphasize the word try. I try to do 5 pages a day, and that's
about 1,000 words.
I guess so. It sounds like a lot to some people. It sounds like a few to others. But when you start to do the math, you know, 5 pages a day is 150 pages in a month. And with my books and in my genre, there's a certain formula that works. If you kick out your fictional novel at 250 pages, the reader oftentimes feels cheated. If you come in around 385, the reader feels like this is really getting to be too much. So you have to hit that sweet spot between, you know, 310 and 322 or something. Mm-hmm. And so as I start to get to the back end of the book, I start to have a conscious effort of word count, page count, and I start to recognize, you know, what do I need to do to extend this, tighten it up, bring it together, and everything else.
Yeah. I did a lot of research. I didn't know anything about writing. I only started writing 2 years ago. So I didn't know anything. So I did, okay, you know, how many pages or word count is a novel? You know, they go, okay, anything from, you know, 60 to 100, anything over 100,000, maybe, you know, gets a little long. Maybe that becomes a fantasy or whatever book, right? And then the military history or fictional, historical fiction, how big are those? This felt a little under it probably because I didn't want to draw it out too much where it gets, I'm repeating myself in the book over and over. That's the one thing you don't want to do, right? So I cut it a little short, but it's, you know, it gets to, but I try to do 1,000 words a day, whatever page count that is. If I don't, then I'm not going to, you know, go, you know, ape shit or anything. I'll be okay with it.
Well, I think it's just the two of us talking here, but I think if we were in a panel and there were 8 of us talking, I think we would all be kind of speaking the same language, just with different variations. It's kind of like a golf swing or the way you wash a car or the way you do anything. Everyone has their own style. Mm-hmm. But in the end, your objective is the same, you know, to get that task done in a certain way.
But I learn every time I talk to an author, I learn, I'm like, it's a good idea. You know, so I try to incorporate those nuggets of information to make me a better writer and have it, you know, because one thing I want to take the reader on a journey, but it's entertainment. And I want them to be entertained.
Yeah. The thing that I've found in the writing community is that there really, personally, there isn't any room for jealousy or envy. Everyone has their own path. And there are certain people you will talk to in your podcast who are going to just zoom to the top and they're going to be awesome and fantastic and very big commercial success. And then there's other people who are going to sell just a few books. But if they're happy and they're doing what they enjoy and the people who do read their books are happy, then it's a win. So I don't really have any feelings of envy or jealousy or anything else. And I think we can all learn from each other. No one has the corner on how anything should be done in this art form. And this is what it is. It is an art form. You're taking something from your mind, transposing it to your fingertips, and then it's getting printed. So other people can now hold it and read it and look into it. So it is a sense of an art form.
Now you make a good point. I haven't met anybody. I mean, I've talked to, you know, some very, you know, established writers and some of that aren't, and, you know, but what I found is everybody wants to help each other. Like if I send something to somebody, say, hey, can you read this for me? They'll read it and come back, you know, give me some feedback, or maybe I'll read theirs, or I'll ask them for some advice, especially for marketing, right? Marketing is the hardest part to me of writing a book is trying to have people buy it. So I think getting all that advice, but yeah, I'm not competing with you, right? You're not competing with me. Somebody just doesn't read one book a year. People read multiple books a year. So multiple people can be successful.
Well, the marketing of your books or my books or anyone else's books is a very dicey situation because the landscape is changing dramatically.
Yes.
You know, we've seen the advent of self-publishing. We've seen the advent of e-readers. We've seen the advent of a lot of things. And you have to kind of learn to embrace all of those platforms and all of those avenues. Mm-hmm. You don't have to stay with one. You don't have to take them all. But you have to find your niche and find your spot that works for you. You're right. We're not competing with each other. I don't normally send any of my stuff out for review with other authors and such, not because I don't think there's any benefit to it, but the topics I write about, very few people have actually physically done. So I kind of stick into my circle on that one. I have a long-term friend and mentor of 20 plus years that I've worked with on other situations, and he has got some published works, and I will talk with him from time to time. But for the most part, I kind of write it. It goes through the editing process, and then sometimes my wife reads it before it goes out, and sometimes she gets it in its completed form.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I did that for my first two. This historical fiction is a little different for me from doing it. So, what about the people that you worked with? Have you got what the feedback from them? Or do they know you're writing? I'm assuming they know you're writing. Have they came back with anything? Say, oh man, yeah, Michael, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that, you know, what's their feedback you've been, the folks that you work with?
I haven't really gotten a lot of feedback from the men and women I work directly with in these task forces and in these drug situations. I think they're aware I'm writing. I don't think they look at it as any type of pulling back the veneer or revealing the trade secrets or, exposing the magician. I don't think they look at it anything like that. For many people who read my books, many of them either lived, still live, or want to live in Miami, Florida. And my books seem to elicit a synapsis in their brain because it's a time frame that's now coming close to 30 years ago. It's also waxes nostalgia with some of them, but they remember these places that Cade is maneuvering his way through, and they seem to like it. I think it brings back some sort of serotonin or synapsis with them sometimes.
Eighties weren't bad. I mean, eighties weren't bad compared to now. Eighties were pretty nice, to be honest.
Well, I think we always look back at our lives and say that it was the good old days, but you know, the reality of it is many of us don't realize that you're where you are because of the choices you made, and also you're where you are because this is exactly where you wanted to be.
Yeah, there's a thing in the Army that, you know, you're with, I was an enlisted, right? I didn't go to college, but I'm with the lieutenant, right? 4 years, West Point, finest schools. We're in the middle of mud, cold. Look at him and go, we're in exactly the same place.
Yeah.
And we have two different paths to get there, but we're in the same place right now.
A lot of times when I've taught and lectured at financial institutions or our law enforcement agencies, I start off my presentation with, I was raised with drug traffickers and money launderers. And sometimes the road a man chooses to avoid his destiny, he finds on that very same road.
Right.
You know, we think we have control. We think we have some sort of magical, you know, GPS in our lives that we're going to, we run our lives. And truth be told, like Al Pacino said in the movie Devil's Advocate, you want to make me laugh? Tell me about your plans. you know, we really don't know where we're going to end up. We just have to make the best of where we are.
Every day. Yep. I have something to work towards and see if you get it, but make sure that you always have plan B and C and off ramp.
Yeah. Well, I think the writing also gives, you know, people like yourself and I a sense of purpose now. I mean, you know, when you do a bunch of high speed stuff like you did and I did in the previous life, it's very hard. You can't always stay at that pace forever.
Right.
You just don't have it. You just can't physically do it. You can't emotionally do it. You can't mentally do it. So to be able to impart those experiences and this wisdom now in this art form is a good thing.
I enjoy it. I never thought I would. I mean, ever in my entire life, ever. And I just had an idea one day. I ran it through my old platoon leader. And then the mistake that I made, and I don't regret it, but I told somebody, folks, I was going to write a book. And they were like, well, you're not going to write a book. I'm like, well, all right, now, you know, game on. I'm going to write a book. And then sure enough, I wrote a book. Then I had another idea for another one. Then I had another idea for another one. So now it just feels, again, it's really rewarding. I learned a tremendous amount by just doing the research and writing.
Well, I've worked on a few TV shows and a few movies. And if you sit through the credits, you'll see hundreds of names scroll by. But when you write a book, it is your name on the spine of that book and your name alone. So you are out there, you are exposed and you are vulnerable.
Oh, you put yourself out there.
You put yourself out there for, you know, acceptance or rejection. Yeah. So, but the one thing that can't be taken away from you is this is your product. This is you. And eventually it may even become your brand.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. You gotta have a brand. That's critical in authoring and stuff. Well, Michael, it has been a pleasure talking to you today. Again, somebody from Miami that was born in Miami, you know, so and still lives there. So again, that's quite a remarkable in itself, I think, because I don't know how many there are. It's like Texas. Well, no, you know, I have three kids. They're all born in Texas. I wasn't. My wife is German. She definitely wasn't. Like, but I'm from Texas, right? And I've lived there so long, but I love it. But it's fine to, you know, meet folks that, oh, I'm from here and I still live here and I've lived here my entire life.
Yeah. Makes you the longevity of historian and everything all rolled into one. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, folks, go out and check. What's the title of the books again?
The main character is Cade Taylor. The very first book is called Trust No One. The second book was called Grasping Smoke. The third book was called One More Move. And the fourth book in the series that currently is Choices and Chances.
Excellent. Well, folks, go out there on Amazon. I'm assuming they're Amazon.
They are. You can find
Barnes
it
and Noble,
under my name. Wherever. Yeah. They're all there. Everything. So you name it. They all, any book retailer in the world has them. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, again, Michael, thank you very much for being on Author Ek.
Thank you.
And thanks for what you've done, because there's probably a lot of people live saying thank you. At least you stopped some of that traffic.
Likewise. Thank you too, Travis, for having me.
Yes, sir.